What I've got for you now is a big surprise. Some of you know this, but you won't tell. I want you to realize who this rascal is right here. This is back when he was really handsome. Brother Billy has been imploring us to share his testimony of God's grace to him. So we're going to have Billy come and talk with us right now. Come on, Brother Billy.
Okay. You won't miss Mike.
Chair. Yeah. Chair on a trip and fall, that would be.
Let me just move this over closer.
Thankful for this opportunity. Thankful for some friends that are sneaking in here.
What have we got, Dave? Oh, the recording?
Yeah.
Okay, and we're thankful. I've got Doug and Rhonda Smith that are visiting. Raise your hands, Doug and Rhonda, today. And we have Dave Shirley. We have some from the class. Sue Schrader and them are coming over. So I thought that since I've been having some problems and so forth, I better go ahead and give my testimony while I can. If you don't see me, that means I didn't make it. But as you get old, yesterday we had the presentation Saturday, and I was the oldest guy there, and I thought, oh me, but somebody's got to be the oldest guy, you know, and that's okay. We miss Andy very much, and he's a certain age. But as I look back at the situation in my life, and some of you don't know, but I've been a geologist for 72 years, and I still do some geology down at the Creation Museum. I still help people with their geology. I still have some oil people that call me and have some questions and so forth. But I'm not sitting around wells night and day like I used to. But it's surprising that where I am sitting right now is an interesting situation, that this very place that I'm sitting, if you were to touch it on the ground, if I was out on the ground, this would be a place that for nearly 90 years I lived within 30 minutes of this spot. In other words, the furthest I ever got away was Azle. I lived in Wedgwood, and Carolyn and I, 47 years up in West Point and so forth. So I was always in this area, even though I worked hundreds of wells, Colorado and Oklahoma and all over Texas and so forth. I would always come back to this point. You know, this is where I lived. And I'd go out there and watch a well, and watching a well means that you have to look at the samples every 10 foot, you have to analyze it, you have to tell what you're drilling, you have to tell them if they hit oil and gas. You have to promote the place to drill, should we drill more wells and everything like that. And it was an interesting time, and I missed some of it that I had the ability to go and do that. And I look at my office and all those things that are there, and I thought, wish I could still do that. But, and I probably still could do some of it. And I'm trying to work on my third book, and I'm hoping to have the strength to finish my third book. So from this spot here, I've actually lived within a 30-minute radius of this 90 years. And in 1972, we were working, of course, the old Birchman, and we decided, they came to me one day and said, we can't get any more lots. We were buying some lots, and we were putting Sunday schools in those houses. And that was in the 70s, and so working with Brother Miles, we were growing, but we couldn't get any additional land. So one person, Burton Lambert, was the chairman of that long-range committee, and he said, well, why don't we just, if we can't grow here, let's just move the church. And I said, what the heck? You can't move a church. There's people that walk across the street to church and so forth. And so the idea, I thought it was a dumb idea, but it kind of mushroomed, and then people said, well, let's check it out. We had a man named Jim Sammons that was in real estate, and this whole area here was pasture. There weren't any cows or anything. We jumped the curb. We came out here in an old bus. All the deacons came out here in an old bus, and we jumped the curb at Las Vegas And there was a service station there, but from there on it was pasture, no 820, nothing like that. It was just open. And we came out there and stopped to just about where I'm sitting today. Another interesting point that here I am standing in a place that if I was outside, this is where we were in 1972, a busload of deacons. And we looked at that and they said, you know, the builders in this area said if we get a church out here, maybe we could get some homes. Some people would build some homes. And so we looked into it and I thought, well, it's not going to go over for sure. I don't think anybody would vote for it. But the opportunity came up and they made us an offer for 10 acres, $30,000. Well, we didn't have a lot of money because until Christ Chapel bought our property. And so that was a lot of money. And we kind of hinted around like that and said, what should we do? Well, as we stopped at this point that I'm sitting today, we looked at the 10 acres and we looked down toward the apartments that are on the west, and they had an intermittent stream. There was a little intermittent stream that went down through there, a gully. Intermittent stream only runs when it rains. So it's a little gully coming down through like that. And we decided not to get that. And it was a good thing because when they built those apartments years later, it cost them $700,000 for the drainage to bring all of that water coming through there out. So we took the hill. We took the hill and we came back and kind of knocked it around in deacon's meeting. What should we do? Should we try to buy this property or not? And if we buy it, we could still build a church out there and people could still go to church here at Birchman Avenue. Is what we used to be called. We used to be Birchman Avenue Baptist. But we had to take the avenue out when we came out here and just became Birchman Baptist. And we kind of kicked it around, and didn't know what to do with it. So one day, at the deacon's meeting, they said, the guy is getting impatient, and you've got to make a decision this week. Okay, so we had a deacon's meeting, and that was 1972. I was chairman of the deacons that year. And so I brought it up the question, what should we do about this? And they called for the question, and we called for the vote. And there were people that came there to vote against it. But the Spirit just led us in such a way that if we had a prayer just before, and then I called for the question and called for the vote, and I expected a lot of opposition, and every hand went up, and it was one of the most miraculous things I had ever seen in my life. Here were these people that came to vote against it, and they went with it. Because we could always use this church for an expansion, you see. We didn't know that eventually we'd be that. And so we bought the property and the $30,000. Well, we didn't know it, but there is a scripture in Isaiah 45:3 that says the Lord gives treasures hidden in the sand. And we had, I was looking this week at a well that was, I sent some things out this week about some oil seeps that were in the Sodom and Gomorrah area around the Dead Sea. And I had a friend that went over there and he found these oil seeps. And the oil was just seeping out of the ground right there by the Dead Sea. So we decided to drill a well over there. And in this scripture, in Genesis 14, it tells about the soldiers falling in these slime pits. If you've ever been to the La Brea Tar Pits in California, you'll see where oil is just gushing up. There's giant lakes of asphalt, giant lakes of oil that are seeping up in the ground. Well, that's a pretty good place to drill for oil. And that's and kind of like Jeff Clement type thing, shoot a hole. And so those were drilled up pretty quickly, all these places where there were oil seeps. And so we continued to think, what are we going to do with the property out there? Well, like I said, we paid $30,000 for it, and it came later that they leased it for the Barnett Shale. We got $40,000 for leasing it. And then we drilled two wells. We have two wells that are to the east of us. And if you drive along that access road, you'll see those tanks and so forth. But the Barnett Shale is not a good producer right now because in those days we were making $13,000 or $14,000 a 1,000 cubic foot. Today it's around $2 or $3 because it's such a surplus of gas. There's a tremendous surplus of gas and we need to use it. It'd be a cleaner fuel to use and burn and so forth. And so then we probably have $100,000 or $200,000 coming from the gas and oil revenue, and then we ran out of the lease, and they gave it to us again, And we were fortunate enough that when they leased the land, we had the 10 acres, but they gave us part of the roads too. And somehow or other, we ended up with part of the roads, and we ended up with nearly 20 acres, so we got some good money out of that. So we came out here, and the area was full of fossils, and we picked up a lot of the fossils, and if you ever want to see those original fossils, ammonites, they're down in the library. Nancy Staff could tell you where they are. That's the librarian sometime. These are the charter fossils, we call them, the ones that we found on the property that were there. And so that's kind of the situation, to the point that I was telling you that I always lived close. And I grew up in Lake Worth. And so as I grew up, first grade through the 12th grade, Lake Worth, 10-minute drive from here, or less, and so forth, we were the Lake Worth Bullfrogs. And I went to TCU, and we were Horned Frogs. I've always been a frog. And so one day, if you were to go across Lake Worth on 820 and the next road is Navajo Drive, you turn left there, our house was 1 minute drive from there. And one day at 12 years old, I was sitting out swinging with my sister, and in came a car, and I looked and it was a pastor, and I thought, oh, I wonder what he's doing here. And so he went in the house, and a little while, Billy, oh no. And so he came in, and he witnessed to me, and he told me about the plan of salvation. And I told him I didn't know, I wasn't quite ready yet. And he said, well, let's pray about it. When my mother prayed, and she cried, I was under great conviction. I mean, it really turned the thing, but I said, I'm not quite ready. So I'll wait till Sunday. Sunday, I held on the pew and I couldn't let go, and I was on the second row and I just wouldn't let go. And the pastor said, I thought you were going to make a decision. Well, I said, I decided to wait on next Sunday. That's the way we always do, you know. So he said to me something startling. What if the end of the world came before then? I thought, my goodness, what do I do? Well, nobody told me you could be saved on any day of Sunday. I was pretty naive. I didn't know you could be saved Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. I thought it was a Sunday thing. And so I thought, how am I going to solve this problem? So I thought, well, if I could just keep the end of the world from coming until Sunday. So I got an idea. I read in the Bible where it said that no man knows the end of time, only God. So this is the trick I used. I said, I know what I'll do. Every morning I'll get up and say, today's the end of the world. And God wouldn't let it happen because I knew it. Somebody knew it, see? And so every morning I got up and said, today's the end of the world. I was a little 12-year-old kid. I knew that God wouldn't let anybody happen because I'm the person that knew it. And so then I waited, and that next Sunday, and oh, there were long days and everything. But I really feared hell. We should be really fearing hell to a point of our children, our grandchildren, and so forth. I know they don't always want to hear the message, but we have to kind of be kind and considerate and think of not them going and punishing the rest of their life. It's really sad. So somehow I've written a letter that's to be open at my death, even, and that I've even already made my obituary just in case. And they're to open it, and the plan of salvation is in there, and they can accept it or not accept it, and so forth. So I became very active, and I was active. I was teaching 16-year-old. I was teaching juniors, and then later on, very active in my college and so forth in these years. And then I graduated and went out in the oil fields, and working mostly in New Mexico and Colorado and Oklahoma, sitting on wells, watching, analyzing, and so forth, but always coming back here. But one day I was working a well at Monahan's out in the sand dunes, and it was just like being in the Sahara Desert. And I thought, there's something wrong. I don't know what's wrong. I don't know if I really gave 100%. And there's a big key about a born-again experience, whether you give 100% or not, or you just join the church. And as Baptists, we're really bad about just going down, put your name here, sign this little thing. The kids don't know what they're doing. And so did I join the church? Did I become a Christian? Am I born again? Or what? It needs to be explained to them. This is something really dedicated. It's for the rest of your life. He's to be Lord of your life. It's to be an experience, a born-again experience that you know when the Spirit comes in and becomes a part of you, and you feel Him, and you know you've been a Christian. And so many people in our churches, and I agree with this, they were probably just church members. And they, even though Billy Graham said 20% or something, you know, are Christians, and the rest are probably just church members. They kind of had that little experience I had there. So I had two things. I've never seen an angel, but this experience was one of the greatest I had. So I went back. We stayed in a motel on the old Highway 80 in Monahans, Texas. And I kneeled down on the bed and I said, "Dear Lord, you know, I don't know if I gave you 100% when I was 12 years old. But if I didn't, I want to give it to you right now. Could you give me some assurance of salvation?" Well, that was the greatest experience I've ever seen. 1,000 light bulbs, flash bulbs entered that room and lit up the room. And it was one of the greater experiences I've had. Not seeing an angel, but I actually had the Lord speak to me one time. But this was a salvation assurance experience. And Carolyn, my wife, went through that, and she said, "I'm going to be saved too." And she prayed that prayer to be sure, assurance of salvation. And I would challenge you, if you have any doubt at all, we had people in our church secretaries through the years that had to go back and be rebaptized and everything because they were kind of like me. Nobody told them, "What are you doing?" I'm finally filling out a little piece of paper. What did I do? I joined the church. We don't give them a lot of information. Well, the other experience was, this was interesting, and as I came back, when we went at TCU, they told us one day, they called us in, there was only 20 geologists there. And they said, "We have 20 years of oil, you guys go find us some." And that was in 1953, 54. We didn't know about the Mideast oil fields. And so we thought it was a mandate, let's go find some oil. But when they brought the Mideast oil fields in, many times I have paid 15 cents a gallon back in the 50s for gasoline. And they would come and check your air and tire and wash your windshield and give you a cup and a saucer. And so we didn't, I didn't know what to do. So I thought, well, I got to survive. So they did some teachers at Lake Worth, and I had to go back and get a substitute teaching job. And I taught school there 2 years and 1 year in the Fort Worth system, teaching science and biology. And I thought, and we didn't have any jobs. There weren't any jobs for geologists. Oh, and there was so much an abundance of oil and gas. So I thought, what am I going to do? So I put a stone yard in over there where Macaroni Grill is, next to Old South Pancake House, and sold stone. I brought stone in from all over the world, and we bring it in, and we did a lot of big projects like Six Flags, Lion Country Safari, the zoo diorama, and so forth, bringing 20 or 30 tons a day of stone in there. But the thing that happened that was interesting, that I thought, well, how am I going to get out of this and get back? There's no good jobs. And every time I pass this spot coming down University Drive at Bowie Street, coming toward Fort Worth, that as I came by there, the Lord spoke to me the only time, "Go get your master's." Well, it startled the heck out of me. I nearly ran off the road. I had a wreck. What the heck? And it was so obvious and so loud and so clear that I said, okay. And the next day I went over to TCU and said, "What can I do to get my master's?" They said, "We don't have anything but a program for 2 years, and you stay here and work on your doctorate and your master's and everything like that." I said, "Well, I got 3 kids and I've got a business and it's busy and I can't do that." "Well, you could take a graduate course occasionally, maybe get enough hours in." So occasionally a graduate course would come at night and the day, and I'd sneak out there and take it. 8 years. I got my master's degree. So I said, I did it, Lord, here we are. And so I took it, and I took it down to Hill County, and I took it to Weatherford Junior College, took it to TCU, SMU, and I took it to all these places, and they said, "Well, we really need a doctorate." I thought, I'm always 1 degree behind. So I didn't know what to do. And I thought, well, as I said to the Lord, "My goodness, you told me to do it, and I've been everywhere, and I don't even have there's nothing out there." So I furnished a stone on the South Campus, And one of the ladies there was a member of our church, Sandy Sullivan, but it's not the Sandy Sullivan you know. It's Jerry Sullivan's daughter that was this is a Sullivan building right here that was named after him. And she was in counseling. And since we furnished a stone there, I went into the school and I told her, I said, hi Sandy, I said, I just stopped by and I'm telling her my story. And she said, I know there's no openings for Pudgeon, has been here a long time, they got somebody on the Northeast Campus, and I don't see any openings. I thought, well, what the heck? And so what I did, I said, if you ever hear anything, let me know. I gave her a card, one of my cards. She put it in the top pocket. And I headed back to the office. Well, when I got back to the office, I had a phone call. I said, can you come out to TCJC? And I said, what's it concerning? They said, we don't know. And what had happened is that I gave Sandy the card. She put it in her top pocket. She decided to go for lunch. She was going to lunch. She tripped, fell, and broke her leg. The guy that picked her up said, looks like you're really having a bad day. She said, yeah, I think I broke my leg. He said, I'm having a bad day, too. He said, I've been trying everywhere to find a geologist for this new course. And he's got to have oil field experience. And she pulled that card out and said, here. And she said, and I recommend you. And so that was the call. I came out there and I said, they interviewed me and so forth. And I had all the qualifications. I thought, wow, this thing is clicking. And next morning they called me and said, you're hired and can you start the class tonight? And I thought, wow. When the Lord answers, he really answers quickly. And we've got to be patient. And we learn to wait and wait on the Lord. And so I taught there for years, and then and I started teaching on Northeast. And when they opened the new Northwest campus, they needed the geology to do the department. So I was had the whole department to order all the supplies and everything. And from that, I worked there about 12 years. But the pay was so low, I put an office in at the Wells Fargo building over in White Summit. And I had an office there for 17 years till they sold the building. And then I built an office behind my house. And that's what we did all those years, was just trusting the Lord and going. And during that other time, I got the doctorate degree. And we have a book. We have a book that if you want to go down to the library.
Look out.
I'm feeling old and feeble. This is in the library, Geology in the Bible, if you'd like to go down and read that. This is all the geology in the Bible. All the earthquakes, the volcanoes, and so forth. Nancy Scaff could help you with it. So here I am, 93, 94 in April, trying to serve the Lord with a blood clot, which can't be without something. So every once in a while I ask the Lord, you know, dear Lord, I'd like to, could you help me with my back problems and this? And he says indirectly, well, you're 93. You expect to have nothing? He also says, you want to trade for something? I say, well, no. I don't want to trade for cancer or anything. Okay, I'll just keep what I got. And so we have to expect that and be thankful that we're still around. And so for the rest of my life, I want to serve the Lord. And there are opportunities. Bob Kramer called and told me an opportunity to speak to a group coming up. I speak to a lot of homeschools. I speak to churches. Still working out the Creation Museum all I can every time they need some geology done down there. And I met Dr. Baugh down there over 40 years ago, and we used to take all our students down there and show them the human and dinosaur tracks. And we're still doing it. But I just can't hold up with a shortage of breath with this blood clot on my lung. So keep praying for that. They said it may be months and years before it clears. I'm on the Eliquis, which is supposed to clear. So those interesting things that had happened in my life, and it was really interesting if you just wait and trust on the Lord, wait on the Lord in some time and be patient, these things will work. And in the case of Sandy, just imagine breaking her leg. And many times I said, Sandy, thank you for breaking your leg. Because if she hadn't, nothing would have ever happened. She fell just the place that he wanted to fall and so forth. So I'm going to keep serving the Lord to the very end, and thank you for this opportunity to tell you a little of my testimony today. Thank you for your time.